Good morning. Welcome back to the Broadcast Retirement Network. This is BRN AM for Tuesday, May 14th, 2024. And our top story today, the life insurance gap hits a record high. Joining me now to discuss this and a lot more, Philip Snyders with The Warner Companies. And full disclosure, he's also my father. Dad, so great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us on the program this morning.
Oh, my pleasure, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
And not to embarrass you, but I know it's almost your birthday, so happy almost birthday to you.
Well, thank you. And yours was yesterday. And again, happy birthday and all the best to you. Thanks.
Thank you. All right, Dad. Here's an interesting piece of trivia I wanted to get your reaction to. So the Apollo astronauts that landed on the moon, they did not have life insurance, which I found to be quite odd because you would think that they would want to provide for their families. I want to get your reaction to that. And you actually, I wasn't born yet, but you lived through the Apollo, not to age you, but you lived through the Apollo landing. So I want to get your reaction to that. Didn't that strike you as kind of odd?
Well, it seems odd from today's perspective, but back then, the risk was about as high as it could be. There was a high risk of, you know, there wasn't an expectation of failure, but there was a potential for great failure there and the loss of several lives. So it's not surprising that they didn't have life insurance, unless they had it previous. They probably had some life insurance, some of them, but you know, that they had bought years earlier, but it wouldn't have been possible, I think, for them to buy individual life insurance at that time, or the risk, the cost of the of insuring the risk would have been astronomical. Excuse the choice of the word astronomical.
Yeah, that's actually a good pun, and I would say that's a perfect example. Yeah, that's a pun included and intended, but that's a perfect example of, I guess, experience rated policies, right? So I guess going forward, now they have this body of knowledge of what, you know, the success rates, maybe it makes for, anyway. So, and probably they...
Just to embellish it, there probably was very limited, I'm going to call it employer-sponsored insurance at that time. So that it was a matter more of timing and what the market could bear at that point in time more than anything else. It wasn't a desire to not have life insurance. They just probably couldn't get it or couldn't get it at favorable rates.
Okay, so let's fast forward 55 years. I guess the first landing was in 69, August of 69 or July of 69. Now let's take, there's a recent survey out from LIMRA, that is an association for the life insurance industry, that says that under 50% of the American population doesn't have life insurance. So knowing that we went through COVID, which definitely raised mortality awareness for a lot of us, does that surprise you? And if not, why not?
Well, it doesn't surprise me. First of all, I don't know what that means, 60% of the population. You know, what comprises the term population? So it's probably of those who could buy life insurance and let's argue should buy life insurance, probably is higher than 60%. But in any event, no, it doesn't surprise me for a couple of reasons. One, despite all its efforts, the insurance industry still hasn't reached a lot of people and found ways to reach a lot of people. Many employers provide life insurance benefits, but many don't. Particularly very small employers don't. And people need to be motivated to consider purchasing life insurance. And that can be a daunting task for some people who have limited familiarity with life insurance, with the process, with an understanding of why they should consider buying life insurance, what type of life insurance. So there's a process for a lot of people that they need to go through to get to the point when they feel comfortable talking about life insurance. Some people just don't want to face the fact that they have responsibilities that wouldn't be fulfilled if they die prematurely. It's just, you know, part of human nature.
So knowing that, I want to go back to something you said, and that is education. So according to this survey, middle-income Americans between 50 and 150,000, and that's 40% of 50 million adults recognize a gap in their coverage. So they already see that there's a gap within this population band. But what you're talking about, and I think it's something we face in the financial services industry and the retirement industry in particular, is a lack of education and awareness. How could you change that? Or how could you foresee carriers and other interested parties, let's say, changing that to reach and to educate people?
Well, that's a good question. I guess if I knew the answer, I'd be the
Well,
CEO of a major
I'm
life
giving,
insurance company.
it's true,
But
but you've seen the life insurance industry in all seriousness for what, 50 years, right? So you've seen it evolve. So what can we be doing better to educate people about the need, whether they buy it from directly from the carrier, where they buy it from a financial advisor, someone like yourself, or they go to their employer. There's a need here.
I think at the employer, let's deal with the employer level. I think employers have a lot on their plate, particularly in today's world. But maybe they can embark upon better internal educational programs and help their people understand why they should consider buying life insurance. Most employer-sponsored plans contain some basic level, a multiple of earnings, or some fixed level of benefit for employees, but there is an opportunity to buy more coverage. And generally, you can buy that coverage without any of the complexities of medical underwriting. But people still need to be educated, they still need to be motivated. And I think some of that could occur at the employer level.
Yeah. Well, it's
Many
good.
instrument, I'm sorry, just to finish this, a related
Yeah, sure.
thought. Many of the major life insurance companies really don't, I want to say, operate in the area of offering products, competitively priced products to, how do I say this, to people in that in the lower end of that bracket. That income bracket that you discussed a couple of seconds ago.
Yeah.
So they're really not in that market. Maybe the only way they're going to be in that market is if they offer some type of multi-life or group insurance type products to employers.
Right.
So it's a question of can the industry find ways to operate efficiently with lower income people to help them buy what they probably would like to buy and probably should buy.
Yeah.
So it's just an ongoing problem. How do you get to these people? The best way to get the lower paid people, frankly, is to do it through their employer. That's the
Yeah.
best way to do it.
Okay. Well, Dad, I want to pick up the conversation on the back end, but let's go to a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to pick up the conversation, but also we're going to talk about long-term care insurance. That's another coverage that people don't always get, but I think with longer longevity, they're going to want to need it. You're going to want to stay tuned right here on BRN AM. Imagine a new television network that will make you richer, healthier, and in control of your financial future. This network is for the policewoman in Nashville, Tennessee, the baker in Dubuque, Iowa, the teacher in Lexington, Kentucky. We want to make the idea of savings and retirement culturally relevant. But what do you see as a defining issue of the midterms? Especially for the smaller businesses, I mean, they are the lifeblood of the American economy. Featuring exclusive interviews, current affairs, and docuseries. 33 years old, you retired early.
The philosophy is money only matters if it helps you live a life that you love.
But you gotta start thinking about retirement as soon as you get in.
The Broadcast Retirement Network will drive very high engagement with premium partnerships. So this isn't retirement and savings for your parents or grandparents. This is for all Americans. And we're gonna change the way you think about money. Welcome to the next frontier of retirement and savings. This is BRN, the Broadcast Retirement Network. Well, Dad, thanks so much for staying with us. Really appreciate you hanging around for segment number two this morning.
Okay, my pleasure, Jeff.
I want to get to long-term care in a second, but I want to ask you this. Talking about education, you talked about the employer. You know, there's something kind of going on in the country around financial wellness and financial literacy. And I'm wondering, do the conversations about insurance, investments, should they fall in line with some of the curricula that's either happening at high school level or maybe in the college level? Because I would think that in addition to the basics, you'd want to know about buying a home, buying life insurance. How do you manage a family's expenses? That to me would be something that you either probably want to talk about in high school or maybe college.
I think a lot of the education financially starts in the home.
Right.
But being pragmatic about this, not many people, or many people, I'll phrase it differently, grow up in homes where that's never becomes a point of discussion. A lot of people today are just getting by financially, and to bring up family finances would be taboo. So that doesn't happen for a lot of people. I recall when you were in school, you had, even in the fourth and fifth grade, you were being introduced to, I'll call it money, how to handle money and things of that nature. But that doesn't happen, generally speaking, I think, in schools today. I think it should. Frankly, I think it would serve everyone a great purpose if it could be done constructively and build a pathway so the people are better educated in terms of their own finances, family finances. But I don't see that happening necessarily on a broad basis at the moment. But that's where I think it starts. And I think if schools spent more time talking about money, finances, how to handle your money, how to handle a checkbook, all those related factors, I think that would pay very great long-term dividends for the society as a whole. But we're a long way from that, I think.
We are. And you know, the checkbook now is, by the way, virtual. All right, Dad, let's shift gears. Let's talk about long-term care. I was making a joke at your expense about knowing. I think you're probably the only person in the U.S. who still writes solid checks, but that's a whole other issue. Let's talk about long-term care. So there is a clear need. And again, this is an area where I think people misunderstand or do not understand the fact that they're going to live longer. They're going to have these expenses. What's your sense right now today about the long-term care market? Where does it stand in terms of product, but also awareness about the products?
Well, I think awareness is growing for sure, because nobody I know wouldn't have someone related to them, whether it's blood-related, family-related, friends or whatever, who's not going through some level of long-term care, not receiving some, everybody, dementia, illness, whatever the accident, whatever the case may be. So everybody, I think, sees that. I think states generally are trying to create plans. The only state that has one now is Washington. California's moving along. New York is under, and maybe a dozen others. But those plans, by and large, they'll provide some benefits, but they're going to be limited benefits. Long-term care, the expenses are astronomical for long-term care services, and they're just going up rapidly. People need to be educated. Most people are not going to have the wherewithal to buy the product. The product's expensive. You can buy it in multiple forms. You can buy it as a freestanding long-term care policy that provides benefits when and if services are needed. You can buy it as an add-on to a life insurance policy that would distribute part of the policy face amount. If you incur long-term care expenses, you can add it to an annuity. But again, that product is still relegated to people who can afford it. And so it's an expensive product. It's getting more expensive, generally speaking. And so it's a needed product, but it's out of reach for a lot of average people in the country to pay for.
So, Dad, can you do long-term care in a group setting like you do health
Yes.
insurance and life insurance? So, are employers, so the answer is yes. And are employers taking advantage of this? Because they're aware of societal pressures. They know that their people are working longer. They're working into the quote unquote retirement years. So can you can buy it in group function form.
You can. There are plans available. Again, the benefit levels are limited because there's the advantage of a group plan is that you don't have to be medically fit. You can't be receiving care when you're applying for the coverage, but assuming you're healthy and at work, you can buy coverage at relatively modest levels. But it's a good start in the right direction, and you can continue those plans post-retirement. So the problem is most employers, they're limited in what they want to provide. I mean, there is some, now some of those plans can be entirely employee paid. They can be voluntary. Some of those could be a combination of employer and employee money. So there's opportunities out there for those plans, and I think the use of them is expanding, but at a relatively slow pace, I would say.
And Dad, you brought up Washington. You were talking about Washington State. Just let's close out. What is, so you said states have started stepping up. And by the way, just to remind the audience, I mean, insurance is regulated at the state level, which to me would explain why states are stepping up. So what is Washington State doing that is different from the other 49 plus DC?
I think I think they call it Washington Cares, but I might be wrong on that. It's a modest level of benefit that is mandated that every, I think, taxpayer in the state has to have some form of long-term care coverage. If you had it in place prior to implementation of the plan and it met the standards prescribed in the guidelines, then you didn't have to participate in the Washington State plan. But otherwise, there's a payroll tax. That's levied against your income. I think it's a pretty substantial tax, and the benefit level is relatively modest. I think it's capped at a lifetime benefit, maybe a little bit less than $40,000. It's a start. It's not unlike a Medicaid type of plan in that sense, but it's limited. You know, it's expensive and it's limited and. I guess, like most of these types of plans, over time it's going to get more expensive. Few of these plans come down in cost over time. But it's a start. At least it
Yeah, but
provides some level of benefits and heightens awareness.
yeah,
When
I
they, just to finish my thought quickly, when you know, you suddenly become aware when you look at your paycheck or whatever, and you see a deduction there that wasn't there sometime earlier. And now you're paying for something, and so it kind of heightens your attention to it. And if you're quizzical at all, you'll want to know what is this, you know, and then you'll start asking questions about how does it work and is it adequate and things of that nature. So it might lead to additional sales of life and of long-term care products, so to speak. But we have a long way to go in that area. I mean, the penetration rate. There's probably under 7-8% of people who could buy long-term care insurance who are buying it. And it's expensive. It's not an inexpensive product to buy.
well, does it scare you that it's mandated? I mean, I just, when I hear the
Well,
word mandate,
I don't want to get
it's...
into the political side of that, but it is what it is. So,
Yeah.
you know, you just go with the flow. Who knows what California's plan is going to look like if and when it happens? New York's and other states, they'll probably have versions of something similar. And they're all going to have limitations and they're not going to be inexpensive because there's no underwriting. So everybody's going to be covered under that plan. And that includes, I guess, I don't know the plan intimately, but I assume there's no restraints with respect to pre-existing conditions and things of that nature. Sorry for the jargon, but so those plans are only going to get more expensive over time. They have, it's just like all these other mandated types of plans. My, Social Security. We all know what we're putting in the Social Security, and now that the threshold of income is way up, I think over 160, maybe 170 a year in income, and that's going to keep going up,
Yeah, but the
So.
difference with Social Security is it's paygo. There's no actual Phil Snyder or Jeffrey Snyder account. It's just money in, money out to pay retirees, whereas what you're describing, at least they're creating individual accounts. So I guess more to come on that. It's an interesting development. Dad, we're gonna have to leave it there. Again, happy birthday to you, and we look forward to having you back on the program again
All
very
right.
soon.
Talk to you later. Take care. Enjoy. Bye-bye now.
Thanks, Dad. Great to see you. Thanks for sharing your perspective. And by the way, happy birthday. And that wraps up this episode of BRN AM. Have a topic of interest, someone you think we should talk to? Then drop us a line. And don't forget, for all the latest curated news and lifestyle, wellness, finance, tech, so much more at all in one place, check out today's edition of our daily newsletter, The Morning Pulse. Want to search our archives, check out our latest content? Then visit our website. We're back again tomorrow with another edition of BRN AM. We'll have a very special guest and, of course, another important topic. Until then, I'm Jeff Snyder. Stay safe, keep on saving. And don't forget, roll with the changes. Now is your opportunity to co-create content around any topic on the First Lifestyle and Wellness Network. Reach a global audience through our platform and co-own exclusive branded content. All of our programs are available on demand and also as audio-only podcasts, so you can take us on the go. Broadcast Retirement Network, available anytime, anywhere, and on any device.